Welcome to Let's Get Our Ship Together, a queer woman of color debrief on the latest in queer lady and POC representation in television and film. I'm Aphrodite.
And I'm Amira.
And this week, we're actually debriefing a couple of episodes because we had a little bit of a break. We didn't get too much ship material. So we had 2 weeks of Black Lightning and 2 episodes of Charmed to talk about.
Let's talk about Black Lightning first, because it's been a bit of a dry spell again, although not as dry as previous dry spells.
Oh my gosh. And like, queer women understand dry spells. Like, queer women fangirls understand dry spells.
The problem is, and I talked to you about this before, Aphrodite, I feel like the writing for the rest of the show, the overarching plot line, is not strong enough to be compelling. I mean, like, it's kind of like interesting ideas, but the execution isn't quite there. So I'm really at this point mostly watching for Thunder Grace. So if they're not giving me a lot of Thunder Grace content, then I'm not feeling super compelled to watch.
So it was super cute. Amira called me on our off week just to be like, oh, I miss hearing your voice. And I was so touched. I was like, oh, we don't have to record a podcast episode, but we can just talk. And it was so sweet of you to just call anyways.
Love debriefing with you.
Yeah, and we debriefed the lack of queer content. We have some like legitimate critiques about the way that Black Lightning is going right now. They're introducing way too many twists for them to be able to successfully resolve within the season. You really got to keep it focused when you have too many unanswered questions, right? Like, each episode we're left with another cliffhanger that doesn't answer a previous cliffhanger. You know,
Exactly. And I was comparing it kind of to Lost, where, you know, they'll answer like one question and then pop up with like 10 more. You know, you brought up a good point about Tobias as a villain. You know, I mean, there's not really like a complexity or any nuance to his character. So he's getting a little bit boring for me. I mean, at first I thought he was interesting, but it's just kind of been a one note character for a while.
And the thing that is a mark of really great writing is a compelling villain with an ideology. Yes, yes. I think we talked about this before with Legend of Korra, where Legend of Korra, each of the books, with the exception of Takuga in the comics, on the show itself, books 1 through 4, those villains had a clear ideology that they were trying to make real. And with Tobias, he doesn't have a vision. He's just like, I take what's mine. I get the things I want.
He just kind of wants to take over Freeland, like as a... And it almost seems like he has some sort of like secret plan or agenda, but like, unless we're in on a little bit of it, it's just like, okay, how long do we have to wait to find out what it's going to be? I'm not really seeing the pieces being put together.
Yeah, it's clear that Tobias is the main villain, and it's going to stay that way for the foreseeable future. But I think it's time for them to move on to a new villain, that or they need to like change Tobias's role. Like Tobias needs to be somehow stripped of power and put in another position, or for him to be, they need to give him some complexity.
Yeah, or even like gain more power. You know, what if he does take over Freeland? Like, what happens then? What does Tobias's Freeland look like? It's just something needs to change, basically, with his position. And so far, it's just been really monotone.
And I think because the writers are introducing so many new questions, like they're not giving us Thunder Grace. Mm-hmm. And they're not developing it. And Grace is so interesting as a character, and we're not getting scenes of her. We're not getting scenes of her. We're not like learning about, oh, she's had these powers all along. She's been keeping the secret. What exactly are her powers? Right before this episode, I sent Amira a YouTube link to with the Thunder Grace scenes from season 2, episode 7, literally 1 minute long. And listen, I'm grateful for the content. I think Chantel Tui is super hot. I will watch her in anything. And her scenes, like with the little content that she does have, she executes super well. And I love that little dynamic where, oh my gosh, where they're lying on the couch again with like, with Grace's head in Anissa's lap. And Anissa, like, again, with the cheesy pickup lines.
I know. I know. Like, oh, I know you're fine. I asked if you're okay.
Stop. Oh, my God. Stop. Like,
It's like those little things that just can't help but make you smile, you know?
It's
really cute. But, yeah, I mean, it was 1 minute long, and it was basically just a repeat of the last Thunder Grace scene we got, where they're you know, having an intimate moment together. Grace excuses herself to go to the bathroom. She has some weird rippling thing from her powers, takes medicine, and then it's done. So, yeah. You know, don't show us the same thing over again. We already got this tease last time. Like, we get it. She has powers. She takes pills. We're not getting any new information other than the fact that they are apparently still hanging out in a couple fashion. Yeah. So good for Anissa for dropping her fuckboy attitude for, I don't know, a couple weeks.
But it looked like, honestly, Grace was going to call it off from the last time we saw her.
Yeah, I mean, she really was trying to keep her guard up, you know? I mean, that I'm serious. That, like, post-orgasm clarity, it really clears the fog from your mind.
Oh, man.
So it's like she laid it down, like, you know, after. I think that she was just kind of warning Anissa, like, I have my guard up. You can't keep fucking around with me. So it looks like Anissa's been being good, at least, or maybe Grace is just putting up with her bullshit.
Either Anissa is being good or Grace is still weak.
Yeah.
Like,
maybe it's a combination. Maybe Anissa's being better, you know, and Grace is like, okay, you know, you're improving. We'll see how far this goes.
She's such a sucker for those cheesy lines.
Wouldn't be, though.
What?
I'm just saying, I love a girl with that kind of humor, you know, like, that gets me. I have a soft spot for that. But, you know, I will say, I just want to make a point that we're really not asking for too much here, because in the meantime, Jennifer has still been getting a lot of scenes with Khalil that serve to further the romantic storyline. And that romantic storyline is not necessary to the plot. They're already showing us what Khalil is doing. We don't need to see him through the lens of Jennifer seeing, you know what I mean? That's not the only time we get to see him. We have scenes of Khalil by himself. We have scenes of Khalil with Tobias. We know what he's up to. So I feel like this is serving to show maybe what Khalil's thinking, because he talks to Jennifer, you know, openly in that way, or he's trying to at least. But it's definitely, there's an imbalance, right? Because this has been building up the whole time, Jennifer and Khalil. I think they're probably endgame. I don't know at this point. But in the meantime, Anissa's not getting anything. And I just feel like, okay, if she's some player or something, then show us that. Show us her random hookups. Like, shit, I don't care. Like, give us the same amount of romantic plot line that her little sister gets.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my frustration is actually that Khalil has had way more character development than Grace.
Yes.
That's more upsetting to me. We know that Khalil is, like, starting to have a change of heart, and he betrayed Tobias, and he ran away. Yeah. He ran away. But what about Grace? Like, Khalil gets so many lines. We see him in so many scenes, and he's part of the season arc. But Grace hasn't been fully integrated. And I share your frustration. I hate when TV is redundant. Mm-hmm. Like, every scene should count.
Exactly.
Every scene should tell us something new about the characters, or, like, lead us at least a few steps forward plot-wise.
Yes.
And the one Thunder Grace scene that we got, that they were definitely tweeting about, that fans were definitely excited about, because they released those behind the scenes photos of Thunder Grace, and it got me really excited. And then to watch the whole episode and then not get to the Thunder Grace scene until towards the end, and have it be only a minute long.
That's basically all
it was.
I just
felt a little bit.
It was just the promo photos.
Yeah, I felt a little bit baited. I felt baited. And it's starting to enter the danger zone for me.
Yeah.
I feel like the showrunners are trying to, you know, leverage queer fans of the show, but they're also not really giving us that much. There was a really great tweet that Nafisa Williams retweeted, and it was right before that episode. The exact tweet is, all caps, hype them up like y'all hype up your white gays, you cowards. And then it shows a photo of Thunder Grace kissing and being flirty on the couch. And I am clapping for that. Like, yes, of course, hype them up. But hype them up if there's content to back this
up. Yes, exactly.
And now I'm almost thinking, like, well, there's been criticism about why queers aren't paying attention to Black Lightning. And instead they're paying attention to these white chips. But I'm also wondering if some of that criticism is directed at the limited amount of screen time that they have. It's not just that they're two queer women of color, but also that they're, like, a very sidelined storyline.
I agree. And
it feels plot B.
Exactly. Yeah. And I would say, I mean, you know, to compare it to one of my favorite white ships, which is Wayhod on Wynonna Earp, their coupleness is featured in every single episode and is often part of the main plot line. you know, them worrying about each other or working together or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, they're always, it's always obvious in every single episode, these two characters are into women and they are specifically into each other. They're together. You know what I mean? Like, you could watch any episode and figure that out. But the same is not true of Black Lightning. You can't just watch any episode and know that Anissa is a lesbian or that she's, you know, into Grace or that that's a thing.
When you make the comparison, you have to compare, like, apples and apples. So the comparison here is white lesbian ship versus queer women of color ship, right? But it's not actually that simple. It's white lesbian ship that's plot A and queer women of color ship that's plot B.
Yes.
Now, if the queer women of color ship was plot A, then that's then I can compare the two and be like, wow, y'all gays are not turning up for this fandom. But I'm like, I can't even blame some of the queer women fangirls from not jumping on board if we're not getting the type of screen time or the kind of, I think, investment from the writers that we are in other shows.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think this is actually a good opportunity to segue into Charmed. So recently on Charmed, we are getting what I would call non-explicit queer women of color representation, where it's like, you know, almost back in the days of Xena, you're getting some flirtiness. We're like, okay, this shit is gay, but like, it's not explicitly super, you know, like, oh, these people are gonna fuck.
Although honestly, the way Jada went up to Mel in the bar,
I know.
This is some Anissa bullshit right here. Like,
yeah, but then I'm like, is that kind of baity? But we can get into that later. Okay, I just want to say overall, I am a little bit worried that this show is pulling a Pretty Little Liars move. This is what episode is this now without Nico, without any sort of love interest for Mel? Mel's legit not getting a storyline, love storyline for multiple episodes, and both her sisters are continuing to get episodes for theirs. Even Macy. Yeah. I mean, Macy, you know, things were supposedly off with Galvin, but every single episode there's some development with Galvin, you know? And then the younger sister, don't get me fucking started on Maggie and that white trash boy. I can't process that right now. But, you know, Mel is just, I miss Nico here. I'm lonely there. I'm sad. Like, it's like, but there's nothing. There's just throwaway lines that vaguely mention it. But like I said, if you just pull a random episode of these last few weeks out and watch it, you're not even going to know necessarily that Mel is queer. So that to me is like really decreasing the representation.
So I actually have something that alarms me a little bit more than that.
Okay, I'm ready.
Are you ready for this?
I think so.
I'm beginning to wonder if Melko just isn't an endgame. Like, I'm wondering if Nico was actually written off the show.
I was thinking the same thing. I'm at least like, thinking that I should prepare myself for that possibility because I don't want to be devastated later on if I've been keeping up the hope this whole time, you know?
I mean, next Sunday is the mid-season finale. My original prediction was that we would see some sign of Nico by the end of the mid-season finale.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, it looks like all we're going to be getting is Jada. This new girl.
Yeah.
And like, I'm all for more like queer women of color ships, especially interracial queer women of color ships. But like, Nico, just like, whoa.
Yeah, you know? It was so sudden. Like, I really expected that to come back in some way.
You know, I've talked to a couple people who, even though they enjoy Melko as a ship, they never really saw like the chemistry between the actresses. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if the creators did some rethinking about we need to get Mel like out of this relationship and into a new one.
Yeah, I mean, that's the quick and easy way to do it. I'm really happy they didn't kill Nico. I think this was a fantastic way to get around the barrier case trope. But I still think it was just so sudden, and it seemed like there was a possibility that they could still get together. You know, that kind of Xena thing where, like, you know, in any universe, in any timeline, their souls would be meant to be together. But I get what you're saying about the lack of chemistry, or, you know, what your friends are saying. Kristen was actually saying the same thing. She was like, you know, I feel like they didn't really build them up that much. We didn't really have that much time to get that invested in them as a couple. And, you know, meanwhile, I'm like, speak for yourself, you know.
I was invested.
I was too. I was like, I was hardcore shipping them. But, you know, okay, let's go over these episodes. Because if Jada is going to be presented as a love interest, which, by the way, I'm honestly into. I feel like, you know, that's another queer woman of color ship, an interracial ship not featuring a white woman. It checks all of our boxes. No cute gaysians, but
I mean, I'm selfish too. Like, yeah. I'm like ready for this to be the year of the Gaijin on TV. But Jada is also a really compelling character for them to introduce. Mm-hmm. By the way, Mel has like, she's left her PhD program. People who I know who've like dropped out of PhD programs, that is a much more traumatic experience than what
it's a very traumatic experience.
Yeah, like the decision to leave your doctoral program is a huge one. It's like a very emotionally taxing, I guess, journey. And Mel just sort of like, you know what? I think I'm gonna not do the PhD. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so unrealistic. But I guess it's also as unrealistic as Maggie's, what do you call, pledging experience.
Yeah. That went on for ages.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, whatever. But yeah, so, you know, Mel has like dropped out of the PhD program and decided she's going to be full-time witch and like part-time bartender to like pay the bills and stuff. Mm-hmm. And when she's at this bar, this girl, Jada, like waltzes right up to her and is like, oh, I just want to get a closer look.
I know. So, I mean, God, she must have learned her pickup lines from Anissa.
That's exactly who she learned it from, because only Anissa and Jada are on their own levels. Although Jada, I don't think she's a fuckboy. She's just someone you shouldn't trust.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like the, you know, woman using her, you know, sexual wiles to get her way. And Jada basically did the same thing. You know, I'm like, oh, wow, this like goth punk witchy looking girl, you know. Queer woman mm-hmm. of color, and then like that twist at the end of the episode where we find out she does have some sort of powers, and we weren't mm-hmm. totally sure, you know, who she was or what her powers were. Like, I was invested.
Mm-hmm.
But I do just want to say a small note, something that I find a little unrealistic mm-hmm. is that Mel has never heard of Tartarus, because you know she fucking watched Xena. You know, she should have been like, oh yes, Tartarus, I've watched Xena, I'm familiar. And it, like, she acts like she's never even heard the word before. I'm like, come on, come on. Mm. Gays and Greek mythology go together hand and fucking hand. So I find this very unrealistic, but, you know, maybe that's just me.
Well, here's the thing that I do buy about Mel and Jada. What's their ship name? Maleda?
Yeah, I don't know. It could be Gel. It could be
some kind of play. God, that can't be right. It could be like Maida? A play on something else. Maida? Oh,
I always just combine their Melko, names. Maida. I don't know, yeah.
No, yeah. Okay, so Maida, Maleda, whatever. So one thing that this ship, if this ship becomes a thing, which I think it will be, is the enemies to lovers trope.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm hoping for, TBH.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
like,
kind of hot.
I know, right? Yeah, because it is kind of hot. Like, Jada being an outsider and being part of the Sarkana is exactly what radical activist Mel would be into. Like, mm-hmm. she just broke up with her ex-girlfriend who's a cop.
Yeah.
And now she's going to date... And now she's going to date this, like, white lighter witch, like, queer woman of color.
Yeah, like, interspecies, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Who, like... clearly is, what do you call, part of the resistance
yes.
against the elders. I'm like, that is Mel's jam. Like,
absolutely.
That is so her. Just from a vocation perspective, I think it's like an upgrade from having dated a detective.
I mean, yeah, we have our opinions about, you know, cops and dating cops, so.
Yeah, so this Jada character is interesting. Like, we're not supposed to trust her, but she was able to verify that she worked with Mel's mother on a spell, and the spell was in
right.
the Book of Shadows.
And gave her a piece of the Scythe of Tartarus.
Yes, exactly. And if you remember, in one of our earlier podcast episodes, we did sort of talk about and anticipate that the larger, quote-unquote, villain of the season would have to be an outside force for pushing back mm-hmm. against the elders.
And
we got a hint of that in that their mother... like, had an unsanctioned spell in the book for the three of them, which means that their mom was doing some unsanctioned shit, period. And that there are other witches out there who are also not, like, standing for the
mm-hmm,
elders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's always going to be some some rebels, you know, rebellion brewing. And I think, I mean, well, first of all, we also accurately predicted that the biotech dad thing would be some sort of overarching storyline. I'm hoping that it'll mm-hmm. end soon. But even worse, I'm thinking more and more that my prediction about that, like, potato that Maggie is dating is going to come true, where like she finds out that he's actually bad, but then he's like, I didn't expect to fall in love with you. And then, you know, all is forgiven and he like goes against his dad or what, you know what I mean? Like, it's just going to be some stupid bullshit like that. I'm already upset about it. But anyway, yeah. So the biotech dad, you know, I'm like confused about that, because do the elders still not realize that they don't have the Harbinger, because they haven't mentioned it? You know what I mean? Like they swapped the paint cans. He's had the Harbinger for a long time. And, you know, at least
I think the elders don't know.
Yeah. Either they don't know, or they just didn't tell the charmed ones that they lost it, you know, or maybe, you know, maybe Charity herself specifically did not tell them, did not tell the other elders.
They had, like, Charity has a paint can, and she did cast some kind of spell to lock the Harbinger in the paint can, which is why they aren't able to, which is why Biotech Dad and his son weren't able to break it.
Yeah, over. I guess I assumed that she was taking it to, you know, cast into some witchy jail, which I guess now is Tartarus, or to destroy it or so, you know what I mean? Like, I thought they were going to do something with it and that she would notice that she didn't just have an empty paint can. But I don't know. I mean, that's, like I said, either she didn't notice, or she did notice and she's not telling the other elders out of, you know, fear of getting in trouble, or all the elders know and they just haven't told the charmed ones, the sisters. So
yeah,
we'll find out. But either way, this last episode was actually pretty interesting, and I did like that with that whole dating app thing, they showed a gay couple. I mean, obviously, like,
they did.
One of them got killed, which was bad, but
yeah, there was also explicit mention about how, like, Black women and Asian men are, like, the least right-swiped groups of people.
Yeah, but I was sad that the Asian guy turned out to be one of those cicada things and then attacked Macy.
I know. Oh, wow. Macy must be so traumatized.
I know. Ugh, poor Macy.
Like, she's already having issues.
Plus, like, I'm pretty sure, I mean, I just feel like, you know, for a show that talked explicitly about sexual assault in the beginning, this is, like, definitely 100% a form of sexual assault, and they just, like, didn't really acknowledge that. I mean, I know it's, like, these otherworldly beings, so, like, that's kind of maybe not on their minds necessarily. They're like, look, we're violated in a lot of other ways by these creatures, and we just need to, like, kill them. But, like, I don't know. I just feel like the way they were, like, you know, they're like forcing, they're like mating with humans and like forcing them to, you know, reproduce their eggs and stuff. And it's like, I don't know.
Total violation.
Yeah.
Another violation. I like that you called that guy Potato. So Potato asking Maggie for a blood transfusion, a violation. Like, she consented to a specific thing, which was to help you, like, help you get better.
Yeah.
She did not consent to have her, like, plasma given over to your biotech dad. So I felt like that was an especially insidious thing to do.
It was.
And, I mean, it was what he was doing, because apparently he, like that's his only chance of finding a cure or whatever. But no, not cool. So not,
I mean,
cool.
It should have been a deal breaker already when he was like, when he heard about her possibly doing an internship in Chicago and was like, oh, but I wanted to spend the summer together. I'm like, bitch, not everybody has some rich ass dad and they could just do whatever the fuck they want over the summer. Like, this is a great opportunity for her. Like, I just feel like if I were her, that would have been a huge red flag. Like, somebody telling me what and what not to do, you know, something for my future like that.
But, like, Maggie just ignores red flags.
Yeah.
For example, I mean, like, Potato, while he's still dating Lucy, is that her name?
Yeah.
So. Like, was still coming for her. Like, red flag, red flag, red flag. Maggie don't care. Maggie don't care about any red flags. She's like, cool, I'll just, like, drape myself in these red flags.
Yeah.
And
that's exactly what she's
doing. I'm just
going
to wrap this around me like a scarf. Yeah. I'm like, oh, this is, like, this color is so great on me. Like, she's like, I'm just going to... I have no problem. And she's like completely oblivious to all the warning signs.
Yeah. God.
So like Maggie is like gullible, naive. And then Macy is on the opposite end of the spectrum. She's extremely cautious, very protective. It's very difficult for her to like venture out and do new things. And like her watching her struggle with like the decision to date and having like Maggie encourage her, I really enjoyed those scenes because it sort of showed how they can help each other.
Yeah.
And you know, these like the oldest sister and the youngest sister and their different approaches to dating, where Maggie is like cautious to an extreme, and then Maggie is stupid to an extreme. And and so
yeah, exactly.
And yes, yeah, but like I like that we got to see like Macy's process, like thinking through it, feeling kind of hurt by, you know, Galvin moving on as quickly as she did, as he did, mm-hmm. and then, you know, giving it a shot with somebody new on this app at the encouragement of her sister.
Yeah.
And
I also really liked the scene where she shut Galvin down and was like, there is no situation, like, there's no scenario in which you talk to me like that. I was like, yes, Macy, yes. Way to shut him down in like a strong but professional manner. I was really appreciative yes. of that. And then, you know, Galvin quickly mm-hmm. apologized and said that, like, things ended with Summer and that's why he's pissed. So obviously we all knew what was going to happen next. But anyway, I was really happy about that because I felt like, you know, Galvin didn't even know that Macy had saved his job for him. And,
exactly.
you know, he's just mm-hmm. been an asshole to her this whole time. And we now found out you were right. I was wrong. That symbol had nothing to do with his behavior. He was not being controlled by any sort of demon or spell mm-hmm. or anything. He was just being
an asshole.
So
yep,
yeah. That's I mean, you know, what can we say? All men are trash. So, but no. In all honesty, I do kind of ship them. I mean, I wish that they didn't have that be part of his personality and that storyline. But I can see mm-hmm. where he was coming from. I mean, she did blow him off multiple times, and he was like, okay, you know, I'm going to move on now. But I felt like he kind of went into it with a snarky attitude, and I don't know if that's because he did yes. secretly. Still like her and was feeling, you know, a little snubbed or whatever, but either way,
of course he did. You
know, they're getting together now. I ship it. I'm okay with it. I'll allow it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I'm not on board with it. I'm on board for Macy's happiness.
Right.
But Galvin is not like, I mean, that behavior even when he was seeing the, now we know she's not a succubus. She was just a regular yeah. woman. who was just just an amazing woman.
Yeah.
Like, super hot, super smart, super, like,
right.
blah, blah, blah. And he was just, like, being kind of, like, he was being childish. Mm-hmm. He was being, like, super pissy and immature towards Macy just because Macy rejected him.
Yeah.
And to me, that's, like, a really, like, that is how I evaluate men, how they're treated, how they treat women after they've been
exactly.
rejected.
Yeah. Because that really shows that them like, at their worst. Exactly. And, you know, I agree yeah. with you. That's a good way to evaluate.
So, yeah. So I'm like always evaluate someone based on, like, how they behave once they've been rejected by, mm-hmm. like, by a woman. Like, that's – or, like, just in general. Like, after you've been rejected, like, how do you behave? You should behave like an adult.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
it.
You should behave respectfully. And that's it. I mean, you're allowed to get upset, yeah. but you shouldn't, you know. Be lashing out like
take
that.
It out. Don't take it out. Yeah, like Galvin was totally lashing out at Macy, mm-hmm. and like Macy still had feelings for him. But I think the thing that maybe like Galvin doesn't understand is just how guarded Macy is.
Yeah,
and that like her being guarded is like a result of like growing up the way that she grew up. Mm-hmm. You know, growing up off like the like only one of only two Black girls. In her hometown, right. Feeling like she had to be controlled and reserved and scientific all the time to push back against the stereotype that Black women are like overly sexual, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. overly emotional, blah, 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 blah. And so Macy being so controlled in her personality is really like a defense against the world around her. And it's like, it sucks that Galvin just didn't understand that.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
didn't think to try to understand.
It's not even that he had to understand that. Like, I feel like, you know, if I'm interested in someone and they seem to be, you know, giving me signals that where I'm like, you know, I honestly don't know if you're interested in me, but I don't have the patience to like be waiting around to see if you are, so then I'm just going to move on, but I'm not going to be mean about it. You know what I mean? Like I'm legit mm-hmm. going to move on. If I don't want to move on, then I'll stay and, you know, try to like get a more direct answer. But I just feel like either way, there's no scenario in which I know you're the same way. There's no scenario in which either of us, when put in Galvin's position, would behave the way that he did, you know, without, mm-hmm. I mean, he doesn't know mm-hmm. about all of her stress about being a charmed one and, you know, you know, having new sisters and being a witch. He doesn't even know about her background, about, you know, even though he knows that she's a virgin, right? That I think that was revealed to him in that episode, or maybe I don't remember. Either way.
Okay.
You know, let's say he doesn't know any of it. Just based on what he's seen, he should not have been that mean to her, because she was never mean to him.
She was always very gracious. I mean, honestly, if I had been Galvin, I would have, like been straight up with Macy and been like, hey, I'm, like, getting mixed signals from you. Is everything okay? Are you interested? Mm-hmm. And, like something as, like, straightforward as that. Because, like, Macy was, like, brushing him off, but, like, it was not clear what was going on with her, and she never had a chance to explain either. But anyways, they're clearly getting together, and
the straight people always have, like, a happy ending, so we don't need to worry about them. But
honestly, like, I mean, kudos to Macy, because, like, professionally, she's, like, navigating things very intelligently, you know, saving Galvin's job without him even knowing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, being professional, putting Galvin in his place when he was getting kind of pissy in the lab. Like, she's just a consummate professional, and she's a catch, and she's emotionally intelligent. Mm-hmm. She's, like, all the things, and Galvin is lucky to have her.
Yeah.
Maggie continues to get, like, the Sutton treatment on this show, where we're just like, oh, God, we can't stand this.
I know, and it's like, we're supposed to be rooting for it. Like, that's the shitty thing. And you know that there are people watching it who are, like, so into that shit, but whatever.
The potato?
Yeah. Maggie and potato.
Every bland white guy we're just going to call potato.
I might get confusing because there are a lot of them, but.
There really are. But, like, yeah, it just frustrates me because, Potato is one of those guys where it's not like, is he cute or is he just tall?
Yeah, he's nothing.
Half the time, it's just, he's just tall, and that's why people think he's cute.
Right.
I'm like, come on.
I mean, he has, like, an average face, a horrible haircut. I don't even know how tall he is. I can't tell on screen. I'm like, there's nothing alluring about this boy. Like, there's nothing. I mean, even right off the bat, we know she only liked him based on his looks, because she didn't know him as a person. The only thing she knows about him is that he's a fucking cheater, apparently. So, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyway, okay, let's move on. Let's not talk about the straight people. Before we wrap up,
okay,
I want to get back to the meat of the, you know, non-explicit QWOC content, which is Mel and Jada. So we find out at the very end of the last episode a twist. So the Sisters of Arcana, who are this rogue group of witches, are actually trying to recruit Mel. And Charity tells her, we want you to join them. She wants, I guess, her to be, like, you know, like a double agent or something. Mm-hmm. I suspect that Mel will be a triple agent and make Charity think that she's, you know, a double agent for her, but actually, you know, start to get on the sisterhood side. But anyway, that's just my prediction. I thought the big cliffhanger plot twist at the end, though, was phenomenal. We find out that Charity's sister, Fiona, is alive and is part of this group.
Yep.
So
I know.
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing, though. I feel like they know, like, Charity and Harry know that she's not dead. They know about it. Like, maybe Charity is like, you know, she's dead to me. because she joined this group, or maybe she, like, thinks that they, like, you know, brainwashed her or something. I don't know, but my suspicion, which could be wrong, is that they know that she didn't actually die. But Harry claimed that they, like, didn't help her after she was institutionalized.
I'm thinking that they think she's dead, and that Fiona faked her own death. Fiona faked her death so that she could be, so she could do more work with the Sarkata.
Did Fiona fake her death, or did they come in and save her and fake her death as a way of
unclear. Yeah, so maybe the Sarkana rescued her from that when she was, like, put away in a mental institution. Maybe the Sarkana went in and rescued her and then kept her in their protection.
Yeah.
So what, like, next week is the mid-season finale. What are we expecting here?
I'm expecting at least some sort of, I'm expecting, or at least hoping for, some sort of climax, not necessarily a resolution, with the whole biotech dad and family. Basically, either, you know, Maggie finding out about Potato, or they succeed in one of their plans, you know, and then the witches are like, oh shit, you know, something for that, because that's been building up, and I don't think that's something is going to come of it in the mid-season finale.
Okay. I think the Sarkana will be our mid-season finale. Our mid-season finale cliffhanger. There's something with the Sarkana.
It could be both.
Cliffhanger, and hopefully, they do need to resolve something by the mid-season finale. It's just unclear what that will be. Mm-hmm. As far as shipping, so here's what I think could happen. Because they did leave the door open for Nico to come back in that Harry and Mel were walking down the hall to Mel's classroom. And Mel said there's no way she would come to Hilltown, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they just sort of that was just a throwaway line, which means that Nico could come back. And if Nico comes back, it might be in not as a series regular, but making a guest appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Later in the season where maybe Mel is now already dating Jada or something is going on between the two of them. And then Nico somehow comes back into the picture. And I know, right? Cause I live for a lesbian love triangle, totally down for it. And maybe things are just starting to pick up with Jada when Nico comes through Hilltown, mm-hmm, and Mel mm-hmm. is having all sorts of feelings about
Ooh,
that.
Oh my gosh. That is, I'm getting emotional just thinking about that. What a powerful prediction. That would be
but
very
the thing is, I'm not sure. Because it sounds like if they're really going to go down this Sarkana route, that means, and I hate that this is so cynical of me, but you don't usually get more than two queer women in a show. They just wouldn't give us three. I just feel the CW, I don't trust them to give us three.
I know.
Three.
Or it could be a fling, in Black Lightning, you know, just sort of a one-off. Yeah. But, I mean, she's introduced as, a key character, so I don't think she would be a fling for her. But I don't know. I mean, that flirty scene, was that really just to get Mel's attention? What was the purpose of that?
The purpose of that was to establish that Mel is potentially maybe about to move on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what the writers are trying to they're trying to set up someone new to make up for Nico's absence. And obviously Nico can't be completely replaced, but if Nico did come back, I think it would be only for a couple episodes and then Mel would decide to pursue things with Jada, mm-hmm. or we'll be left with some kind of cliffhanger. The way things are going make me think Melco's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's super disappointing for a lot of fans who were already shipping them from the get-go.
Right. I mean, but it's reasonable at least to think that we would get some official closure, because I feel like it ended mm-hmm. so abruptly that even if it wasn't going to happen, they should at least bring her back so that we know for sure it's not going to happen. You know what I mean? So we're not just left wondering,
yeah.
or at least, left wondering until mm-hmm. Mel gets into her next serious relationship, which should be any day now.
Oh my gosh. I mean, Ellen Tamaki has been tweeting # where's Nico?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which to me, why would she tweet that unless Nico was going to come back?
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. I mean, she's still involved, watching the show and stuff. So I feel I don't know. I feel it would be more obvious or announced even by her if she was leaving the show. All we can do is hope at this point. So.
Oh my God. Oh, speaking of hope, mm-hmm. do you remember that photo I texted you that Chantel tweeted? Okay. So I had a mini meltdown at work the other day because and Amira was well aware of it because I was oh my God, I'm practically screaming in my cubicle and I don't know what to do. But there was this picture that she tweeted of her lounging around with some definitely lesbian, and their hands are their hands are holding and their fingers are interlocked. And I was but wait, is Chantel Thuy a queer Asian playing a queer Asian? Mm-hmm. And then I got really, really excited. And then I started to look for evidence. And then we read an interview that was very confusing and it's still unclear.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that just got me thinking how amazing it would be if any of these queer characters were played by queer actresses.
Yeah.
And we don't know that, and I don't want to pry because that's people's private lives, but also I really want to know.
I know. It just – I feel there's almost a comfort. Ever since I was a kid, it's it almost it makes your crushes a little bit more realistic. I mean, obviously you're never going to meet them or get with them or anything, but it's one of those things where it's
At Plexicon, anything could happen.
That's true. That's true. At Plexicon,
anything
could happen.
Anything could happen at Plexicon.
But I don't know. There's a comfort – almost in knowing that your favorite queer characters are played by queer actors, And it just mm-hmm. brings more, like, more authenticity yeah. to the character. So, I don't know. I'm always for that.
Yeah. Right now. It changes their relationship to the fandom,
it
too.
It does.
Because
then they're one of us.
Because it's not that you're, like, an outside... Yeah, you're actually one of us, and you're actually in the community with us, mm-hmm. feeling these feelings with us. And so I think it just sort of says, well, what is the actor's relationship with fandom? And, like, we love allies. It's great. Lots of allies have played queer characters. But it's like something special when the actor is queer too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like there are lots of reasons why actors don't come out, and because like Hollywood is like homophobic mm-hmm. and among other reasons. But I think that's starting to change. But it would be great if some of the queer women of color ships that we ship were played by queer women of color themselves.
Yeah, but. Yeah. So at this point, it looks like Chantel Tui is possibly, maybe bisexual. That's the interview, again, it was the wording was kind of confusing. We're not sure if she was talking about Grace Choi, because Grace Choi is definitely bisexual canonically. I'm not sure if it's been brought up in the show yet, but she, in the comics, is canonically bisexual. So I wasn't sure if she was talking about, like, oh, like, I too am bisexual, or if it was just about Grace, but she was speaking mm-hmm. in the first person, so I don't know, but...
Yeah. I mean, who knows? Like, we got Stephanie Beatrice. Anything could happen.
I know.
So I'm holding out hope.
That was a win. Stephanie Beatrice was a big win.
For sure. Okay, so we'll have more to debrief after next week's mid-season finale. And hopefully we get a little more Thunder Grace before Black Lightning breaks for the holidays as well.
Yeah, hopefully. I'm hoping we have a lot to debrief, actually.
Oh my God, yes.
And, you know, we're very interested in the plot line of the overarching plot line of Charmed, obviously. We keep saying we're not going to talk about the straight people, but we do because we care. It's really enticing writing.
I know.
So mm-hmm. we'll probably just debrief about the mid-season finale, regardless of queer women of color content, but or ship content, rather. But we'll see how much Black Lightning has to offer. That's the one I'm a little worried about.
Yeah, I know. Keeping my fingers crossed because we lost Nico and there's only one more queer Asian left.
I know.
On the scene.
I know. Grace is our only one.
Yeah. So thanks so much for joining us this week, where we like tried to pack in 2 weeks worth of content into this episode. There wasn't a whole lot, but we had plenty to talk about anyway.
We always do.
Yeah.
All right. Join us next time and be sure to follow us on Twitter at QWOC Ship for any updates about next episodes. Bye.